A blockbuster report this week is being compared to the Pentagon Papers, those documents that revealed the U.S. government lied to the American people about the war in Vietnam. The Washington Post reports that U.S. officials in three administrations basically did the same thing about the war in Afghanistan. Senior U.S. officials made rosy pronouncements they knew to be false, hiding unmistakable evidence as the war became unwinnable after the U.S. also invaded Iraq. The Post obtained 2,000 pages of previously unpublished notes of interviews with generals, diplomats, aid workers, Afghan officials. Jason Dempsey is a non-resident fellow at the Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft. He's also a retired Army officer. He served two tours in Afghanistan. And Jason, the Post quotes one three-star general in a government interview in 2015 saying, "We didn't have the foggiest notion what we were undertaking." Your thoughts when you read this?
Well, it's both. It's great that this report is out there. You know, we need to be having these conversations. It just the unfortunate part is we're having these conversations that are too little, too late. And given that we've been talking about it for years, the question is, will this finally be enough to get us to question some fundamentals about how we're approaching Afghanistan?
Well, and when you think that, you know, 2,400 or so U.S. troops died, their blood was shed on this ground. And, you know, we're reading that many of them at the time when they were there questioned their directions. How about you?
Yes and no. I would say, and the interesting thing about the design of this war and where the military shares a large degree of culpability is in the way we rotated people through, such that the majority of people who went there were going there for the first time. And they went there with all the optimism and drive that you would expect of American service members. Unfortunately, that optimism and drive extrapolated over only something of maybe a 4, 9, or 12-month deployment means that everybody could leave at the end of their individual tour and pat themselves on the back and say, yep, I made progress, without considering whether or not what they did actually added up to anything that was sustainable or contributed to a meaningful long-term goal for the stability of Afghanistan. To your question, you know, for me, it was being there in 2009, sharing all that optimism just as the Obama administration was pouring troops in, thinking that we were all finally getting to the good war, but then turning around, in my case, going back in 12 and 13 and realizing that we were essentially on a treadmill. That very little progress is being made and that every single rotation was repeating the efforts of the rotations prior.
Yeah. Well, there is such a thing as the fog of war. I mean, these aren't video games. You know, these are complex societies. But still, you wrote this in February of this year, the U.S. failed in Afghanistan. The only points of debate left for analysts and historians are by how much and who is to blame. Now, the report, though, seems to conclude that the war effort was going well in Afghanistan, the effort to take down the Taliban, which had given comfort to Osama bin Laden and the 9/11 attackers. But then in 2003, the George W. Bush administration invaded Iraq based on false information about weapons of mass destruction, a country that was run by a tyrant, yes, but it had nothing to do with 9/11, was a relatively stable country. And the report seems to conclude, or you know, people in the report seem to conclude that that's when Afghanistan went off track. Do you think blame can start there?
Absolutely. And unfortunately, this is a case where everybody shares a little bit of the blame. And we certainly took our eye off the ball. But there was also, even had we been there and stayed there, I don't think we could have overcome some of that fundamental American arrogance and ignorance with the way we were approaching foreign countries. Because you remember, it went so fast that we took down the Taliban. And then, you know, around all the hoopla over the Loya Jirga and we were going to draft a new constitution for Afghanistan, I think we fell into that quintessential American trap of believing that because we have unchallenged military might, that that can translate into the ability to turn foreign countries into miniature versions of ourselves.
And by the way, you say the Loya Jirga, that's the tribal council. President Trump made a surprise visit to Afghanistan on Thanksgiving, announcing that peace talks with the Taliban had resumed. He had canceled them earlier this fall after the Taliban had made attacks and also a U.S. soldier was killed. Here's the president speaking at Bagram Airfield on Thanksgiving.
The Taliban wants to make a deal. We'll see if they want to make a deal. It's got to be a real deal, but we'll see. But they want to make a deal. And they only want to make a deal because you're doing a great job. That's the only reason they want to make a deal.
And absolutely no disrespect to the people he's talking to, the service members who have mm-hmm. no fault here right. at all. But I hear you chuckling.
Yeah, I mean, this was in keeping with this commander in chief who has failed in almost every respect to be a commander in chief. The statement caught everybody by surprise, including apparently the Taliban, including his negotiators, including the Joint Chiefs. It was something that he made up on the fly, and I guess it's the perfect encapsulation of the absurdity of this, in that. Reality be damned, in Afghanistan, we're just going to wish that it could turn out the way we want it to. Yeah.
Well, you are being very critical of President Trump, but this report is critical of President Obama before him and President Bush. It feels as if every administration just could not wrap their arms around this. And the Washington Post first came out with these documents, but the New York Times has set them in a graph, and it's stunning. $2 trillion was spent in Afghanistan, $1.5 trillion waging war, and the Taliban now control or contest much of the country, $87 billion to train Afghan military and police. Afghan forces can't support themselves. $10 billion on counter-narcotics. Afghanistan supplies 80% of the world's heroin. I mean, it just goes on and on. $24 billion mm-hmm. on economic development. Most Afghans still live in poverty. Again, given the treasure that was lost there.
There's plenty of blame to go around. And unfortunately, what we've allowed, right, we're stuck, unfortunately, in this weird situation where we've got this toxic and somewhat dysfunctional blend of both fear on the one hand and indifference on the other, right? What keeps us there, a colleague of mine this morning who was a veteran himself who also worked in the Obama administration, Andrew Exum, said the reason we're still there is because everybody's afraid of what theoretically might happen if we were to leave. Now, nobody can quantify that. Nobody can say why Afghanistan is more of a threat than any other terrorist safe haven on Earth. But we're not going to pull out because nobody wants an attack to come from there. Yet we also don't care enough to really dig in and say, well, are the actions we're taking, are they actually making a sustainable difference? And this is where every single metric you pointed out is absolutely true, and almost all the metrics point to failure. Yet the way we've run this war is that somebody like Nicholson, former commander in Afghanistan, he can say, hey, look, now we're taking on the opium trade. And he can show you short-term metrics of, you know, blowing up factories or taking opium out of the countryside. But yet, as we all know, our opium policy has changed year by year by year. And so who cares if tactically we made a short or small dent in the opium trade over 6 months? We have not had a coherent strategy to deal with the opium trade writ large. And so overall, it's largely been a failure. And that applies to almost every dimension of our effort in Afghanistan.
Well, briefly, what would you do?
So for one, we have to realize that we are not going to create an Afghanistan that looks like America. And unfortunately, what we've been building is a military that looks like ours. We need to cut that out and let Afghanistan figure out its own direction, its own path. And that's going to be a little bit messy. And we have to have some faith in the fact that people actually want peace besides us. And so we should let them figure it out versus trying to impose our solution on Afghanistan.
Does that mean U.S. troops stay there to kind of keep safety on the sidelines while this happens?
I don't think so, because whenever troops are there, we're inevitably drawn into fighting or checking the various groups. And until a peace deal is reached with the Taliban, any U.S. troops that are there will find themselves in a constant tension of fighting the Taliban. And at the end of the day, as you mentioned before, they weren't our original enemy. They don't need to be our enemy now.
Jason Dempsey, retired Army officer who served in Afghanistan, now a senior fellow at the Center for the New American Security, also a non-resident fellow with the newly established Quincy Institute for Responsible Statecraft. Jason, I'm going to ask our other listeners who also served in Afghanistan to please weigh in, see what other opinions that we get. But thank you so much for yours and your service.
Thank you for your time.